This is Phil Rowe
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Our guest has joined us. I think she's going to be fascinating, listeners. I think you're going to really enjoy hearing from Shaista Tyabali, who's in the studio with us now. She's been through the wars, poor girl. I don't want to sound too patronising. In fact, behind the smiling public face, nothing could be further from the truth. Although it wasn't diagnosed until the late teens, Shaista has battled a vicious and ever-changing autoimmune disease called lupus. Now, we featured lupus on the programme before, one of the support charities, and one of the coordinators from that charity in the East has been on Cambridge 105 Radio with myself a couple of years ago. Shaista was told about this when she was actually in her teens, so she battled for around 9 years without knowing really, or the doctors really knowing, what was wrong with her. Welcome. Thank you for coming in to see us this morning.
It's lovely to see you, Phil. Thanks for having me.
What was life like for you between the age of 9 and 18? You knew something was wrong with you. Everybody knew that. Your family did. Obviously, you were spending a lot of time in hospital. But before you really knew the diagnosis?
Around 8 and 9, I started developing mouth ulcers. And then by 10, I was admitted into hospital because I had really high fever and joint pain. My joints were swollen. And I had a really fast heart, tachycardia. So when I was admitted, because I was 10, the doctors thought I had query rheumatic fever, which is quite an old-fashioned sort of condition to label. But because I was a child and I had this heart murmur, they thought that's what it was. And then they gave me really high doses of antibiotics, penicillin. I was off school for 3 months. I had a wheelchair. And then somehow it quietened down. And I just carried on with life, really, until I got sick again around 17, 18, and then I was diagnosed with lupus.
Initially, then, they just thought it was an infection and that an antibiotic could clear everything up for you.
I think so. I think there was no immunology screening done at that time, whereas today immunology screening is really sophisticated, so autoimmune conditions are being picked up a lot more.
So how much between your childhood years and your teens of terms of proportion of time did you spend in a local hospital at Addenbrookes?
I was in India.
Oh, okay.
At the time when I moved from India when I was 15. So within a couple of years, I ended up at Addenbrookes, where I've pretty much lived for the rest of the time. But I was born in Bombay, and so that first hospitalization was in the hospital where Dad worked because he's a doctor. So I don't know. I felt quite happy at that time because Dad was always around and I knew most of the doctors who were looking after me. They were friends of my parents. So it was a very different experience when I was 10 and in hospital to later when I was 18 and in a strange hospital. And it wasn't that strange because my father had done some of his medicine there because he studied medicine at St. Andrews and then he did a couple of years at Addenbrookes as well. Yeah, it's really strange how life goes around.
So a lot of support from family, but then a father who's very learned and very knowledgeable, very professional in healthcare, but he didn't know what was wrong with you.
No, he didn't. I mean,
gosh,
when I had the diagnosis given to me, and this is something that happens to a lot of lupus patients, I was actually on infectious diseases because I'd had a holiday in India and I'd come back with this high fever, so they just assumed it had to be TB or something like that. But infectious diseases gave me this diagnosis of SLE and said, don't worry, it's really mild. Just go away on holiday and carry on with your life, go to university, etc. So because he talked about it in those sort of terms, I think when we got back in the car, my parents started discussing the gas bill. And, we just didn't have a clue of the potential of the disease and what lay ahead for me, for all of us.
And have you been well? Are you well now in say, recent times, say, the last year or so?
It's pretty tricky because
difficult to answer.
It's such a complicated condition, and there isn't enough understanding. There hasn't been enough understanding about it. The drugs that have been used have always been poached from other conditions. So currently, and pretty much always, I've been on chemotherapies, and this latest chemotherapy that I'm on, it's a monoclonal antibody therapy. It's kind of quite specific pathway, which attacks B cells in the immune complex. But over a long period of time, obviously, it suppresses the immune system so much so that you are more likely to get pretty serious infections. So I've had 4 hospitalizations this year with various infections. And experienced a PICC line for the first time, which is when you have a line running into your vein and it stays under your skin and you have to self-inject. And that's been new for me. So when you say, am I well? It's a difficult question to answer in any way other than in a complicated way.
Just in your mind, you probably feel quite buoyant at the moment. You're here talking to us. You look well enough to me, of course, at the moment, but it probably means that you've never been able to have a career.
Well, I'm a writer, and so the thing that's always mattered to me is to get the degrees that I wanted to get. It took longer than I suppose most people, so I took a break between my BA and my MA. But being a writer means that at least I'm doing what I always knew I wanted to do, and I write in hospital, I write wherever I am, and I started my blog in 2009, and that means I know I'm able to write and know people are reading me. So I think if you can write and be read, then a certain part of your dream is very much fulfilled.
And you spent an awful lot of time in hospital then, Shaista, which means that you've had a chance to create from your mind.
Yes, yeah. Hospital is actually quite a brilliant place for stories and for narratives and for poetry. It's a place of extremes. It's a place that regularly dehumanizes patients. We tend to be on the lowest part of the scale of hierarchy, even though we are the reason that hospitals even exist. So it's a place where, because of the dehumanization, anyone who's artistic or creative or compassionate wants to create humanity. So, for example, one time I wrote a poem on a leaf, an autumn leaf, and then I stuck it on the wall in between the lifts where the most traffic is in the hospital. And it stayed there for a while, and then somebody saw it and then came up to me and said, I don't think that's very hygienic.
So, as I say, it's regulations. It's not hygienic, so you probably had a porter remove it or something.
The leaf didn't stay there very long, but, you know, that's ninja poetry. And sometimes I'll hand out a poem to a patient. So someone came up to me one day and said, oh, I know you, I remember you. And then she told me that I'd written out a poem and given it to her. I didn't remember her, but she remembered the poem. So it's an opportunity. It's a place where you can create art.
And that's the thing, of course, hospital, a conveyor belt of faces. You've been in, sadly, in and out of hospitals so many times then, Shaista, that you haven't really, well, I suppose you get to know one regular dedicated team of staff, but they don't have time really to do more than look after you professionally. They don't have the time to sort of stop and stare and have the time of day with you for personalisation, a little bit of a chat, some humanity other than what they have to do for you, I suppose. They just don't have that time.
And it's not just that, actually. Because I have systemic lupus, which is, the full name is systemic lupus erythematosus, but the word systemic is really key. So it means that this condition affects all of me, all parts of my body. So what happens is you end up being separated and fractured out into various different departments. So you'll be seeing nephrology team, rheumatology, ophthalmology, in my case, because my eyes have been very badly affected. And then, you know, as a female, you'll see gynecology, and there are a lot of ologies involved. So, yes, and a patient is very rarely given guidelines as to how long your appointment's going to be, and then you don't know what the mood of your doctor will be on that particular day or how stressed they are. So we're very, very vulnerable to all sorts of things. But one thing I didn't mention, as, you know, with my writing, is I do write poetry. And I did bring some poetry.
And we can find out more in the blog. We're going to hear some from you. If people have been enjoying listening to what Shaista's been talking about, then lupusinflight.com is the website you can go to. She has a blog there. And another thing I was going to ask you, Shaista, before you do us a little reading. Is it firstly a reading that you created in hospital while you were particularly unwell?
It's definitely related to hospital, yes.
Let's hear from you.
Okay, well, this is a poem I actually wrote in June of 2009, just after I'd gotten out of hospital. I'd been in for 3 months. So it's a poem about regrets, and you'll see why. It's called The Toll Bell. I regret not going to the places I want to know. Waterhouse at the Royal Academy, Carmen at the Corn Exchange, Oita in summer with my brother and his girl, barbecues and canapes with friends who live miles away. If I should die, not tomorrow, but soon, I regret no punts on a lazy afternoon. Drifting by colleges I do not belong to, but that surely belong to me in some circadian fantasy. I regret 12 long years of monsoon, unseen, unfelt, unheard, unreal to me who once knew the rhythms of her city. I regret not playing the piano, the cello, the violin. I do not regret lullabies my mother used to sing to soothe my insomniac self at 5 and 8, and now when we share this hell of not knowing what is to come and what will be lost, and, worst of all, playing the what-if game. I regret that most of all.
Everything pours out there, doesn't it? Memories, local anecdotes, a little bit of summer in there somewhere, maybe. All the things you probably are thinking about when you're in those four walls. Because in the hospital where you've been, in Addenbrookes, you often are taken to level 10, which is at the top of the hospital, so you're up in the gods of the place anyway. And because that's the centre, of course, where they can stop any form of contagion getting to you. So you're kind of in an isolated infectious disease unit.
Yes, I've been up on Ward 10 twice, but also infectious diseases was also downstairs at one point. Because I was in there, that's where I was for 3 months on N2, and that's on the ground floor. So I think I've been pretty much on most of the floors of the hospital, no one specific place. Sadly, because rheumatology doesn't have its own dedicated department anymore.
And so. You've enjoyed education. You've been very fortunate. You've got to Cambridge and you studied here. You've done a master's.
Mm-hmm. At Anglia Ruskin.
Oh, Anglia Ruskin.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
In, of course, literature, I guess.
Yeah.
Of course.
And creative writing.
Mm-hmm. And publishing. You say you're a writer, and that's a great career to have. I wish I could write and be as fluent as yourself. Have you been in sort of published form where you've actually made some money from your work?
Money? I don't think I've made money from my work. No. That dream is still yet to be accomplished. But I've been published, you know, poems here and there, and I write a lot of articles as well. I write for different journals and newsletters. I write regularly for the Cambridge Lupus newsletter, but also medical journals that are interested in the relationship between creativity and patients and physicians. So I write for those. And I've been writing a book. I was actually talking about it in the last interview that I did 2 years ago. And I finished it and I'm sending it out to agents at the moment. And yeah, you know, receiving the necessary rejections and then trying to, gird my loins again to get going for the next lot of agents. But I think this is a story that most writers with their first book encounter.
And what are the odds are, Shyster, to being sort of 40 to 1 for every one hit with a publisher that says, yeah, we love this, maybe a few alterations, maybe there's about 40 misses. I don't know. What are the odds like these days?
I don't know, but I think there's a blog I saw which said you've got to get 100 rejections before you feel like you've really put in the work. I have no idea.
It's terrible odds. If you thought about it, you'd probably give up. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that giving up is not an option when you're a writer. I mean, you're going to keep writing, which is really the important thing. But I was working with my blog for all these years, and now, just in the past year or so, I've been drawn towards YouTube a lot more. I think, suppose it's a visual medium, and you can hear people's stories in a much more immediate way. And so that's where I've moved to, because I feel like, although you can read books and books are incredible, I feel like people are also books in themselves and have incredible stories just in conversation. And so I've started this series where I'm in conversation with friends of mine who have lupus or any autoimmune condition, and we're able to just talk on a platform that doesn't involve doctors and doesn't involve anyone curating our conversation. And I think that's inspiring for me right now.
You've taken a lot of your ideas from fellow patients around you, some people that you won't meet ever again. Well, a lot of your treatment been in an open ward, so you've had the ability to talk to, say, 5 other patients that have been in with you at the same time.
Yes, I have infusions on an infusion bay, and there's about 5 of us facing the other 5 and another little extra room. And then I've been going there since 2009, so I know all the nurses. And I trust the nurses, they're friends of mine, and it's a warm environment. And although self-injection is an option that often gets brought up, I quite like going to the hospital every 3 weeks and knowing that I'm safe I'm safe there. I don't really meet many people over and over again, actually. It's incredible what a wide variety of people from around the country sometimes that come. Addenbrookes is, it's a teaching hospital. It's quite well-renowned.
Yeah, there's pretty much all the specialist disciplines that you could ever hope or want or dream of. You hope that they are never needed, of course, but the reality is that they are. So you get the injections done by the hospital. You're not one to have a needle. In yourself. Do you like putting a needle in yourself? Well, nobody likes putting a needle in yourself.
No, I don't think anybody particularly does. But I can, as I said, I had a PICC line twice, and so yes. I can, you know, even you can learn to do anything, and really, it's amazing how human beings are able to adjust to situations. I think we have extraordinary capacity to learn.
If you've got time for one more poem before we leave.
Sure. This is called Windfalls. It's a walking poem, so I wrote it from where I was renting to home where my parents are. It's like that, even in autumn, especially in autumn when you become part of the fall. You have forgotten to drink enough water through summer, and now you mirror the parched, desiccated leaves that crunch and crumble beneath the heels of your boots. You are being pulled back, taut elastic to your roots. You pass a green tub full of this year's Bramley windfalls. Leaves fall, dancing free of your marching feet. Everything is not dead when it falls. I pick up the living shaped like hearts, the plump yellow still beating. I run out of breath, clutching on to the promise of new shoots awaiting me. I am gorging on the wind that feeds me hope. I am home.
That's wonderful. And you take up meditation as well, Shay, so that's something you do.
Yes, yes. I came across Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Zen Buddhist mindfulness teacher. He lives in France. He's exiled from Vietnam. And the practice is engaged Buddhism. So it means you, just in your daily life, you don't sit aside. I mean, you can if you want to sit aside and practice meditation, but really just in your life to be conscious and aware of where you are right now so that you're not pulled into the past or pulled into the future, which generally for a lupus patient is terrifying. So you just stay right here, right now, and that's good enough.
Well, Shyster, you don't know what you're... I keep calling you, sometimes call you Shyster and Shyster, but it's Shyster, of course. Thank you very much for coming in. You don't know what your future holds. I do hope you stay well.
Thank you.
That you don't have many or any more episodes.
Thank you very much,
and maybe
Phil.
We'll see you again.
Thank you
so much
for having me.
Coming by to see us. And if you want to find out more about Shyster, then it's lupusinflight.com, which is her blog. You can find that online. Not only that, but you're very open because you actually allow people to contact you there as well.
Oh, yes, definitely. Contact people, write to me, and I love receiving their emails.
So go ahead and do that. Get writing, as they say. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.